Good morning. Please be seated. I would like to take this opportunity to welcome Judge Jeffrey Welbaum of the Second District Court of Appeals for sitting for Justice Joseph Dieters. Thank you, Judge, for coming. This case is 2022-1053, State of Ohio versus Williams. On behalf of the appellate, Ms. Shoot the Run. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Fantastic.
I'll be reserving 3 minutes for rebuttal. Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court. This case requires a straightforward application of this court's Burns decision. The defendant here was charged with murder in juvenile court. He was after that bound over to the Court of Common Pleas, where the grand jury additionally charged him with tampering with evidence because he got rid of the murder weapon in order to avoid apprehension for the murder. That tampering charge is firmly rooted in the murder charge for which he was bound over. So the adult court was well within its authority in accepting that guilty plea.
Is this firmly rooted standard, is that rooted in the statute?
It is not rooted in the statute, barring your pun here. That being said, the rooted in standard is consistent with the statute. So we're not standing here pushing back on that particular standard or rule because its application ultimately gets us to the same place as we would get to in any adult criminal.
Well, why wouldn't we just apply the statute and fix whatever we've said that's inconsistent with that in the past?
Well, Your Honor, I can't stand here and say that I oppose that. I do think that a straightforward application of subsection H does get us to the same place as applying a rooted-in standard, which is admittedly atextual. That being said, what I'm trying to say by that is any adult criminal court adjudication necessarily has certain background principles. And for instance, Criminal Rule 8, which governs joinder, would not permit for the purpose of a single criminal trial the joinder of two wholly unrelated charges to begin with. I mean, in practice, that ends up looking very similar to the rooted-in standard, which requires an examination of the underlying facts, the legal elements, whether there's overlapping witnesses, interlocking evidence, to come to the same place as to whether two charges can properly be brought together in one adult criminal court adjudication.
Doesn't Senate Bill 288 actually revert us back to Smith and make Burns less applicable? Because it's added a definition of the case that says that all charges that are included in the complaint containing the allegation that's the basis of the transfer for which the court found probable cause is basically what's in the case. So, it's been argued elsewhere in this court by others that Senate Bill 288 actually makes Burns really inapplicable because it actually cements in the application of the bindover statutes as they were applied in Smith.
My answer to that is yes and no. Let me start with the yes part, which is that Senate Bill 288 does codify Smith. And it codifies Smith by making express the fact that certain charges are off the table in adult criminal court once a case is bound over. Those charges are the ones which are retained by the juvenile court, which necessarily means they must have been presented to the juvenile court, and thereafter the juvenile court must have found that those charges are not supported by probable cause. Now, I promised you a no answer, too, which is what happens with Burns? And I think nothing about Senate Bill 288 abrogates Burns at all. And I'll explain why in two parts. First, Your Honor, you're right, 022 does define case now after Senate Bill 288. That statute governs what a case is pre-transfer. When we get to the post-transfer statute, which is 2151.23 subsection H, all of that language, which includes the language Your Honor just quoted, the commission of an offense that was the basis of the transfer of the case, but continuing reading on that sentence, we also find out that the adult court has the authority to enter a judgment of conviction for additional charges. And none of that has changed, despite the fact that the General Assembly did take a look at that particular statute and added onto it, but did not change the language that was interpreted in Burns to include additional charges. So Senate Bill 288, which codifies Smith and Burns, continues to be reconcilable and consistent with one another.
Okay, so one question on this, though. My concern is that your approach could be abused, and the record leaves me with that concern, because it's not that tampering with evidence was discovered later, because we're talking about disposing of the gun, but there was actually argument at the Bindover hearing about tampering, but the prosecutor, for some reason, did not include it in the charges. And so if we go in the direction that you want us to go, there may be situations in the future where the prosecutor, either because of lack of time or effort to amend, would or for whatever reason would say, well, I'll just hold off and I'll make that charge in the adult court, because I just don't want to deal with it here, and that way we'll still be okay. I mean, how do we resolve that?
So I want to push back on and resist the idea of any sort of abuse. Now, what we're talking about here in the Bindover context is a threshold question. That is, can the state establish that the juvenile committed a crime, at least one crime, that is so serious that the General Assembly has deemed it appropriate to be adjudicated in adult criminal court?
Mandatory Bindover, correct.
That's correct. And so to the extent that we're talking about charging and the Bindover process in juvenile court, it is to engage in this initial threshold inquiry, which is, where should we go? What is the appropriate place for which the juvenile will be tried for his crimes? In this particular case, the seriousness of the murder offense is such that that particular threshold question is answered at the outset. So this is not about any sort of abuse. This is about efficiency and ensuring that we get to the appropriate venue as efficient as possible. That being said, Your Honor, any concerns you have, the General Assembly has already built in. And let me explain to you what I mean by that. To the extent that there is a rare case in which ultimately the threshold question as to where to go is incorrect, meaning the juvenile is ultimately convicted of crimes that are not so serious that they shouldn't belong in adult criminal court, there are reverse bindover procedures to ensure that the juvenile ultimately gets to the place where he or she is supposed to go. And so viewing the entire scheme comprehensively really establishes the fact that the question we're asking at the juvenile court stage is, where do these crimes get adjudicated? And that is
No, we're asking question. If there's probable cause that the crimes were committed. That's what's happening in the juvenile court.
That's right, Your Honor. But once that is established for a serious enough crime, that threshold inquiry has been satisfied.
I understand. But the question is, what if tampering had been added as an additional count in the trial in the juvenile court, and the juvenile court didn't find probable cause for tampering? The adult court under Smith wouldn't be able to deal with it. So why shouldn't we require for that to be brought at the juvenile court level, especially when the record shows that it was discussed before the juvenile court?
Well, for one thing, the state is not required to bring that. And second, we know that from the statute. The statute does not require that all charges be brought at the juvenile court. That being said, Your Honor, the example that you gave where if the juvenile court did...
I want to stop you right there, because if you look at Smith and the language rooted in the cause of action, that language in the statute that the rooted in is actually applying is telling the trial court in the adult court how to resolve the case. And it's not talking about how to indict the case, it's talking about how to resolve the case. Do you agree with me on that?
No, Your Honor, because the rooted in language is not found in the statute.
No, not rooted in, but the very statute that we are talking about, where there can be three dispositions, a lesser included offense a lower degree of that offense, a lesser included offense, or a different offense. And what we did, the rooted in language in Smith referred specifically to those three outcomes, which are how a trial court adult court would resolve the case involving a bound-over juvenile. Now, it seems that prosecutors want to extend this further, but if you look at the statute, can you actually broaden it in all honesty?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'll give you a couple of reasons for that. One thing you pointed out was that that was a dispositional language, but taking a step back, that statute also says including but not limited to, which means that it contemplates that there's more than one, or there's at least something that is not being mentioned here.
It's referring to the outcomes, not the proceedings.
Sure, Your Honor.
You can't honestly tell me that it would extend that far.
And I would like to, if you'd indulge me, give you the second answer to that, which is, it also talks about, even if we're talking about the end stage, the entry of a judgment for the conviction, for the commission of an offense that's different from the offense charge. What that means, where do those charges come from? And I think the answer is we have to look further up in the statute, where once a case is transferred to and is within the gambit of subsection H, what we're talking about is the case beginning anew, the case beginning in the same manner as if it had originally been commenced in
that
court.
Is the entry of judgment the same as an indictment?
No, Your Honor. The entry of judgment is a final disposition.
It's the conviction, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. But that is not the only thing that subsection H refers to, because it is including but not limited to additional information that is not presented in the statute. Second, I want to add that the case, we need to give meaning to the words, what it means to begin the case originally as it had already been commenced in the court. Giving meaning to that means grand jury presentment and indictment. And that is where the case, once transferred, actually goes through an evolution in which charges can be added. That being said, Your Honor, I realize I might be running very close to my rebuttal time, so I really do want to talk about how the rooted-in standard would apply in this particular case. The way that this court applied the rooted-in standard in Burns is to do an examination of the underlying facts of the charges, the additional charges, to see whether they are rooted in the crime itself. Now, in this case, I want to say that that particular standard and that application is quite easy. And it's easy because tampering with evidence under Ohio law is necessarily a derivative charge. It comes out of underlying criminal conduct. So to the extent the juvenile has been bound over for the underlying criminal conduct for which he tried to avoid apprehension, as is the case here, the tampering with evidence charge is firmly rooted in that particular underlying criminal conduct for which the juvenile has been bound over. Now, I'm happy to answer any additional questions. I know I'm running up against my rebuttal time. There are no others. I'm happy to reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On behalf of the appellee, Ms. Hammersmith, good morning.
Good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court, my name is Lauren Hammersmith. I represent Timothy Williams. In the lower court, the state of Ohio conceded the application of State versus Smith to this case. A concession which the first
Wait a second. I mean, did they really do that?
Yes,
they conceded the, I guess it's application, but is that really a concession? I mean, first of all, is that transcript part of our record that we can review?
Yes, Your Honor. The state at oral argument was asked by the Court of Appeals.
Could you just answer my question? Is that transcript a part of the record?
Yes.
Where?
It was at the oral argument.
Is that part of the record on appeal in front of this court?
Your Honor. And the first district asked the state, do you concede? And state said yes.
Okay, so I can go get that because I'd like to see it. How do I get it?
You can get it on YouTube. It's part of the record. Or this court could look at the state's...
How do I get it on our record?
The First District Court of Appeals denial of the state's
I'd like to see this. So usually if you make something part of the record, it's part of the record in front of this court. So how do I see this?
Certainly, Your Honor. If Your Honor would look at the First District Court of Appeals denial of the state's motion for reconsideration, there's a paragraph and that's on this court's docket.
I get that, but did they attach? Is it attached? How do I see the whole thing?
They note that the state made an unambiguous concession that State versus Smith
implies. So how do I see the whole thing?
It's on this court's docket.
It is?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. The First District called the state's concession unambiguous. Thus, along with various other prudential concerns, this court should dismiss Timothy's case as improvidently accepted. And I first want to discuss those prudential concerns. The issue here has been waived in the lower court due to the state's concession. Second, the grounds for the decision below were based solely on Smith, not Burns. Thus, this state's proposition to this court is the first time these arguments have been presented to any court in this case. Third, the facts, in particular the state's concession, and its failure to preserve any argument otherwise, have invited the error the state now claims, and similarly prevents this court from reaching the issue decided. Fourth, because of the lack of controversy below, answering the state's proposition here would require this court to write an unconstitutional advisory opinion. And fifth, the state's arguments have been mooted by the statutory amendments in this case. In short, this is not the right case to decide the thorny questions that the state presents. Briefly, to touch on the statutory amendments, I want to point this court's attention to Revised Code Section 2151.23H and 2152.022. H states that 2152.022 applies with respect to determinations of jurisdiction after the transfer. And the juvenile court retains jurisdiction over charges included in the complaint. What transfers to the adult court? The case, the word case has been defined by the statutory amendments. That does not allow for the addition of additional charges in the adult court. Put shortly, Your Honors, the decision below was correct under Smith, and it is now correct under the statutory amendments.
Where does that leave Burns?
The statutory amendments abrogate Burns, Your Honor. It is our position that the rooted-in exception from Burns was abrogated by the statutory amendments.
And I think we all accept that the rooted-in language in Smith was an explanation of how the statute applies on disposition in the adult court. Do you agree with your colleague across the aisle that that language of a lesser degree of an offense or a lesser included offense or another offense refers to anything other than sentencing?
I do not agree with my friend on the other side that is the way that can be read. So as Your Honor pointed out, that refers to how a case can be resolved. This court actually stated in Smith, referring to 2151.23H specifically, that statute does not authorize jurisdiction over whatever charges the adult court independently determines should arise from the underlying course of criminal conduct. That's what this court said in Smith. However, just to point out again, this issue was waived below, unambiguously conceded, as the First District pointed out in their opinion. So the record does not consider Burns at all, because the state asked it. The state did not ask it to. The state asked it to apply Smith. It did. And so the questions that the state raises before this court are being done for the first time and are improperly before this court.
So were you saying that the use of another offense is limited to disposition?
Correct. It's a defense protective part of the statute. It allows adult courts to resolve cases in the way as if they were originally brought. It refers to charges of conviction, not charges of indictment. Those are different.
Thank you.
Unless there are any further questions, we would just respectfully ask that this court dismiss Timothy's case as improvidently accepted.
Thank you. Ms. Sherdi-Ren, you have 2 minutes and 54 seconds remaining.
Excellent. I'll be briefer than that, I hope. I only have 2 points to make here. First of all, there was no concession at all on the part of the state. Everything the state said was accurate, which is that State versus Smith, which was decided after the court, the parties finished briefing in the court below, that only came out afterward. It represented a sea change in the way juvenile bindover statutes were being read. And so anything that had been briefed before needed to be revisited. And in fact, in the argument itself, the state explained that there was a factual distinction between State versus Smith in this case, and that a remand may be appropriate to explore that. Well, ultimately, all of that is water under the bridge because Burns does explain that additional charges can be brought as long as they are rooted in the charges for which the defendant was bound over. And ultimately, this court cannot be bound by any stipulation of the parties to apply outdated law. Burns had not been decided at that point, or to apply erroneous law. And getting rid of Burns really doesn't do what my colleague here thinks it does, because ultimately, Smith only concerned those charges for which the juvenile court affirmatively found were unsupported by probable cause, and which now we know are retained for adjudication in that court. Second, I just want to make a very quick point about subsection H, which is that even if that section were to be read as end notes, end disposition nodes, you cannot be sentenced of a different offense and tried on a different offense if you are not charged of it.
What about on a plea?
That is true, Your Honor, but there's also the entry of accepting a verdict and entering a judgment of conviction, which is a part of subsection H, and which specifically includes the possibility of committing another offense that is different from the offense charged. So in addition to pleas, it also speaks of verdicts and entry of judgment of convictions, and those charges come from somewhere. That somewhere is earlier on in subsection H.
Surely you can't be arguing that the only time that statute applies is when there's a jury trial.
No, not at all, Your Honor. I'm pointing out that the statute includes and delineates more than just guilty pleas. It delineates verdicts, the entry of a judgment of conviction for different charges. Those charges come from somewhere. They must come from the fact that the case starts in adult court.
Well, if it's a verdict, though, it's either going to be a lesser degree of the offense or a lesser included offense. It's not going to be a completely separate offense if it's a verdict.
Well, that would read out the final sentence, Your Honor, of subsection H, which includes the final clause, my apologies, which includes the commission of another offense that is different from the offense charged. So that has to be given meaning, and the way to give it meaning is that Burns still holds additional charges are well within the adult court's authority to accept.
So does the state take the position that the General Assembly did not uproot all of Burns?
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor.
And on what basis?
Because it is consistent with the Burns decision. Burns did apply Smith and said that particular charges are off the table. That is, charges which the juvenile court affirmatively found were unsupported by probable cause. Burns does nothing to contradict that. And in fact, Burns echoes a lot of the same principles we have in adult court adjudication as to additional charges, which subsection H, I want to point out, has not been materially changed since it was interpreted in Burns and includes the possibility of additional charges.
Counselor, do you think courts should treat charges that are brought against a defendant, a juvenile in the adult court, that could have been brought at the juvenile court from those charges that arise or rooted from or comply are in compliance with Section 8 that could not have been brought at the juvenile bindover or during the juvenile complaint?
Not at all, Your Honor, because I think any charges, whether they could have been brought at the point of the juvenile complaint or were first brought in the adult court because that's when it was feasible, nothing limits in the statute the state from bringing those charges and treating them the same either way. And I've also pointed out that.
So, but wouldn't that encourage some sort of gamesmanship on behalf of the state? Could they bring a juvenile complaint, move for bindover if it's discretionary or if there's mandatory bindover, and then hold some charges and then bring them in the adult court?
Again, I resist the gamesmanship reference here, because I don't think that's what's happening here. To
the
extent,
I'm not saying here. I agree with you.
I understand. But to the extent that the state can establish probable cause for a serious crime, the state is going to do that. I don't really see why it would charge something else, something that would not get the transfer to the appropriate venue. Second, I also want to point out that, again, I think the way to view the bindover process is as a threshold question. So to the extent that question is answered, I mean, this court has said that process should not be mini trials. So what we're really looking for is, can we figure out where these crimes should be tried in the appropriate venue? And I see, I don't want to abuse the red light.
I want to ask another question now.
Sure, Your Honor, of course.
On the statute.
He's going to abuse the red light.
Right.
That's allowed.
I'm allowed to do that.
I hope
that.
I won't.
Assume there's 9 charges, 6 are found probable cause, and it's a murder charge, juvenile delinquency proceeding. 3 are found not probable cause. The 6 bind over. The statute reads the juvenile court continues on the other charges, but if there's not probable cause, mm-hmm. what are they continuing on?
Well, Your Honor, I do agree that that represents something kind of strange, because it says that the state cannot continue proceeding, probably because they cannot establish that they have probable cause or the evidence to support those charges. I'm very happy that I don't have to deal with that unique situation right here. I do know that.
But you represent the state. That's why I'm asking.
I do, Your Honor. And I do think that 022 says the charges must be continue to be tried in juvenile court. Perhaps
the charges. There's no probable cause.
I don't think that there are not any charges is the right answer there. It is that the state could not establish probable cause at that point. I mean, whether or not it makes sense as a strategic matter to continue without dismissing those charges is a very different question. But the charges are still there, and they are supposed to proceed under 022 in the juvenile court.
Thank you.
Because the state could dismiss and make a new complaint if it had more evidence in the juvenile court, correct?
I think they can dismiss. I don't want to speak because about whether they can bring a new complaint. I'm not sure whether that might run up against other potential concerns. I do agree that this parallel process makes for many additional questions, none of which are presented here and none of which we've briefed. But I do think the parallel adjudication process does present other conflicts that may need to be addressed by this court in the future. If there are no further questions, we ask that you reverse.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time today. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court. Marshall, would you please close the court?
All rise.